Hello, my name is Tom Boone.
And I'm Joanna Bailey.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Simple Flying Podcast, where we'll give you the lowdown on the latest news from the world of commercial aviation. Here's what we've got for you this week.
Coming up today, I'll take a look at the weekend's coronation celebrations from an aviation perspective, while Tom tells us about some big or rather long news from Boeing.
Joe will see why airlines are abandoning Twitter, and I'll look at the longest flight since 1997.
Finally, I'll tell you about a proposed change from US aviation that could benefit all passengers.
So now you know what's in store, let's get on with the show. And Joe, I think this weekend was really yours for the coronation.
Absolutely. You know, it was an important one for the whole of the UK and for many of our brothers and sisters around the world. There were lots of people flying in. Of course, we crowned our new King Charles III. Lots of celebrations and for some lucky people, an extra day off work. Not me, unfortunately. But these sorts of high profile celebrations mean lots of high profile guests. And the coronation didn't disappoint on that means. So from Friday afternoon onwards, VIP jets from all over the world were touching down near London, bringing heads of state, royalty, presidents and more VIPs to attend the coronation. They arrived at various gateways around southern England. So Farnborough was one, Northolt, which is an RAF base, and of course, the ever popular London Stansted Airport, where the Air Force One has previously flown in, I believe. So there was no Air Force One this time. From the US, there was no Joe, but Jill Biden did fly in, although on the modified Boeing 757 used for government transport. Tom's president, Mr. Frank-Walter Steinmeier from Germany, and his wife arrived, but not on the new A350 VIP transport, but a smaller Bombardier Global 6000. Does have the same livery, though, which is quite nice, little and large.
Yeah, and I think it's great to see that people aren't just flying the biggest thing they can. Whereas, you know, I think quite a lot the UK A330 gets used just because it's big.
Pretty. You know? Big and impressive, yeah. So Thai Airways flew in the King and Queen of Thailand on a Boeing 777-300ER. Another 777-300ER belonging to the government of India touched down from Delhi. Probably the biggest arrival, in fact, definitely the biggest arrival, was the Qatari Emiri Boeing 747-8 that came in from Doha. And the longest non-stop journey was an Australian Royal Air Force Airbus A330. So that came in from Darwin. It actually left on Thursday evening and touched down at London Stansted about 19 hours and 30 minutes later. So a really long flight for those guys. There were loads more. You know, Ghana had a Dassault Falcon 900EX. Kuwait flew in with an Airbus A340-500, which is quite a rare spot these days. China had an Airbus A330-200. The Abu Dhabi Emiri flight came in on a 777. Japan Air Self-Defense Force had a 777. And the Angola government brought a VIP Boeing 787-8. So it was a really good day for plane spotters. There were loads more interesting arrivals than I've mentioned. But for one royal, there was no VIP jet bringing him to London because non-working Royal Prince Harry reportedly took a seat on a commercial Boeing 777-300ER operated by American Airlines. And for regular arrivals, you know, all the people that were flying in to be part of the celebrations and maybe even our dear Prince Harry arriving into London Heathrow, BA had unveiled a celebratory mural on the flight path. It was actually designed by a couple of local children and was placed at Thornbury Park in Hounslow. It was actually massive. It was 47 metres by 64 metres. Apologies to our Imperial friends across the pond, but you'll have to do the conversion yourself because I haven't. So passengers landing on runway 27 left could see it on the right-hand side of the aircraft. I'm guessing it's still there, so maybe if you're flying into Heathrow soon, you'll still get to see it. But what was a bit of a disappointment for me was the flyover, because that was clearly set to be the highlight of my entire day, and I'd sat through the whole thing. So there should have been around 60 military aircraft in the flypast. There were loads of helicopters, which don't really float my boat, but also a bunch of proper planes I was quite excited to see. The A400M, C-1039J Hercules, C-17 Globemaster, the Typhoon, the F-35, the Battle of Britain Memorial flight, including a Lancaster, 2 Spitfires and 2 Hurricanes. And of course, as Tom mentioned, the UK's A330 MRTT Voyager in its flashy livery. But, you know, Britain is Britain and the weather is pretty much always miserable here. So Coronation Day was no different. We saw typical drizzle and lots of low-lying cloud over London. So the flypast was massively scaled back. In the end, it was just the helicopters and the Red Arrows, which was, I guess, cool to see, but it was a disappointment. It wasn't the full shebang that they'd been practicing for. But did you tune in for the coronation, Tom?
Yeah, I did, just because I didn't have anything else to do than anything else. But it was quite funny because I just put the telly on and the German TV channel straight away had it in German. And I was like, no, we're watching this on BBC News, on BBC World News, actually, which is nice. Where I watched the Queen's funeral from the Emirates 777 flight on their live TV. So
My goodness.
I gather they did a big song and dance and were serving coronation quiche on their flights.
Oh, were they?
Today.
Yeah,
during the thing.
Yeah, I didn't get to have a flight during the coronation, but yeah, would have been nice. I didn't even have any coronation quiche. I was going to make it, but anyway, I digress. Back to planes.
Yeah, well, while Emirates was busy giving out coronation quiches in first and business class, I wanted to talk about an airline that doesn't have a first or a business class, and that is my good friends over at Ryanair. And I did have a whole Lufthansa A380 segment planned for all of our listeners, especially Bjorn, who messaged me saying he loves the podcast even when I don't talk about Ryanair and Lufthansa. So I was going to talk about the Lufthansa A380, but Ryanair has trumped them. And that's because they placed an order for up to 300 Boeing 737 MAXs today.
Wow.
In itself, this is huge. But then when you realize it's the MAX 10, which is a bit longer, so even more airplane, it's crazy. You know, this huge order is 150 firm orders for the MAX 10, which in itself is like bigger than most firm and flexible orders, and then another 150 options. And it's really interesting to see this finally get put in place, because Ryanair, you know, we've been talking about this MAX 10 order since before the pandemic. I remember it was a hot topic right when the 737, when the MAX was grounded, and when I was in Brussels at the start of the pandemic, we were talking about this. And I remember in September 2021, you even reported that they'd completely cancelled this whole order. They'd walked away from negotiations because Ryanair was saying that Boeing wanted to sell it for too much money, and Boeing was saying Ryanair wanted to buy it for not enough money. But it seems that at the start of the year, Boeing got back in touch with Ryanair and you said, you know, hey, we know you wanted to do a deal before. We're still here. Let's make something happen. The fascinating thing about this is, you know, I mentioned this to O'Leary when I met him in March this year, and he told me that basically you shouldn't expect an order before the end of 2023 or early 2024. This was at the end of March, so we're now sort of still early May. It's only really a month and a half later, and this huge order has been worked out. So I asked him, you know, what happened to sort of get from end of the year to just a month later? And apparently Boeing, you know, were really keen to make the to place the order. Ryanair wanted to, you know, avoid a situation where they wait until the end of the year and another 1,000 MAXs are ordered and they have to wait even longer to get the planes. So, you know, it's quite interesting. I wanted to talk a bit about the MAX 10s because, you know, this will be a new aircraft type for Ryanair. Each plane is currently going to contain 228 seats. They can fit a maximum of 230 in. So they're not going full densification, but pretty much. And this is 21% more seats than its Boeing 737-800s. It's going to take delivery of these aircraft between 2027 and 2033. Although O'Leary did say, you know, if Boeing can build them sooner, we'll take them sooner. So that will be quite interesting. Obviously, you know, with such a big order, it does need to be approved by the shareholders, and that is on the table for the AGM in September. But, you know, they're going to have many more aircraft, because around half of the order is sort of earmarked to be increasing the fleet, and the other half is earmarked to replace older aircraft. So, you know, more aircraft with more seats, this is going to mean there's a lot more capacity available to the carrier. And it seems like O'Leary really wants to make use of this because, you know, let's just talk about 2022. They carried 168 million passengers, and this was a huge record. You know, this they've never carried that many passengers. This was insane that they managed that. They want to boost this by 80% to 300 million guests annually by 2034. So in 10 years' time, 300 million guests, which is just the number fails to compute, you know. but yeah, the one thing I did want to say is that I do find it a bit interesting that they've gone for the MAX 10, because when I chatted to O'Leary again, he said... the issue that Ryanair has with the MAX 10 is obviously these 30 extra seats because, you know, you may think, oh, there's just more seats. If you put it on a busy route, you can fill them, more money. But that's not the full picture because EASA, who's the, everyone knows, hopefully, is the European Aviation Regulator, they mandate one member of cabin crew for every 50 seats that are installed on an aircraft or part thereof. So, you know, say you've got 200 seats or 199 seats, and only one passenger on there, you still need cabin crew for the number of seats rather than just that one passenger. So they would be very well looked after, I guess. But, you know, with the 228 seats that are going to be on board this aircraft, they're going to need another cabin crew member, which is going to increase the cost of cabin crew by 25%. And also mean, you know, these things are going to be doing six flights a day on three rotations. It's maybe not even going to be that one cabin crew member doing all six flights. So, you know, firstly, you're going to need a lot more staff, but you also need to pay for them. And I think we were doing the maths, just you and I, earlier, and we worked out that if you sell the seats for the same price, you only get 15% more money, but then you're spending 25% more on cabin crew. And it's not exact science maths, so please don't quote me there. But, you know, they do need to work out how to make a business case for it. But clearly they've done that because you wouldn't even order 10, let alone 300, if you didn't think you could make it work financially. And O'Leary said it could even be good for passengers because it would lead to even cheaper fares because they might be trying to fill these last remaining seats on these planes. But yeah, I could go on and on and on about the Ryanair and the MAX 10, but I'm going to draw it in there because I realize I've been going on a bit already and give you a lovely segue.
I don't see any lovely segue, but Ryanair is actually featuring in my next segment, which yep. I'd completely forgotten about. But I am still reeling over the significant changes to what is my favourite social media channel, Twitter. I mean, this has been going on for a while, but for a start, companies that don't have the blue check marks, which you do have to pay for, will no longer appear on the For You page, which is the default viewing page. So anyone who still wants to be seen with that interesting content is having to pay. But the real stumbling block has come with the connection to the API, which is required if you want to use third-party management apps. So anybody running a kind of a business through Twitter needs a bit of software to kind of respond and deal with direct messages and tweets more effectively. How much? Well, for an enterprise, which is just about any business, it costs around $42,000. So, you know, for an airline, that's not a huge amount. I mean, it is quite a lot, but it's more the principle of the fact that it's always been such a useful and free-to-use platform. And as a result, some airlines have started boycotting Twitter. So, you know, airlines have done really well using Twitter for customer service. You can just at the brand or you can send a DM and you generally get a fairly good response from an operator. And it's much better than waiting on the phone for hours and hours trying to get through to a contact center. Well, no more for Air France because they abandoned Twitter customer support at the end of April. The airline said that since Twitter has changed their conditions, our customer service by direct message on this network is unavailable. They directed people to their own website, to WhatsApp and to Facebook Messenger to get their the usual help. And then in early May, Air France's sister airline, KLM, said it was also discontinuing customer service via Twitter. It noted that direct messages on the social media site no longer load in its protected customer care system. So this is what I was talking about with the API. You know, the people are still doing the same job on the same bit of software, but they can't connect to Twitter anymore. So those messages will go undealt with. And then most recently on May the 8th, I told you Ryanair was in this story.
I know, Ryanair announced, I set you up perfectly.
You did. Ryanair announced via Twitter that it would no longer allow customers to contact the customer service department on social media, on this social media platform. It's directed people to Facebook Messenger and also to its 24/7 chat bot to resolve problems. So, you know, this isn't just a problem that affects airlines, but there are quite a few major brands that have removed their customer support from Twitter or have pulled advertising or have otherwise disconnected with the platform. So WordPress, for example, is not letting people share directly from WordPress sites to Twitter. Telecom, which used to run its customer service through there, has removed it. There was one that got the API fee revoked. That was the New York City's Metropolitan Transport Authority. They said they weren't going to share on Twitter anymore because they couldn't afford the API fees. But the social network reversed course on this, saying that verified government and publicly owned services that use the tool for critical purposes like emergency notifications, transportation updates and weather alerts would be allowed to use it for free. So, you know, I don't think airlines are ever going to fall into that bracket, although they do provide transportation updates. They're certainly not verified government or publicly owned services. So I think, you know, we're going to see many more airlines exiting Twitter as a platform for customer support, probably pulling some advertising as well. It's a bit of a shame because it was always a really useful way to get in touch. But it's good to see they're not abandoning Messenger and WhatsApp and things like that, at least.
Just yet.
Just yet. Until they all start charging for management software.
Well, maybe everyone will flock there rather, but we'll see. But I wanted to spend my second story of the podcast talking about the world's longest route, and not actually one specific route, but the sort of evolution of this over time, because I got sent a couple of weeks ago some really interesting data from OAG, who sort of dig through all of this. And it tells quite an interesting story, because it hasn't really gotten any longer in the past 20 years, the longest route. It's got shorter, but it hasn't got any longer, and it's got slightly longer. We will go over that. But I sort of wanted to dive into it a bit more. So, you know, their data starts at 1997, so I'm not really sure too much without doing a whole lot of digging what was the story before then. But, you know, for over a decade, the world's longest route title was held by Quadjet. So initially, South African Airways route from New York's JFK to Johannesburg OR Tambo Airport clocked in at 6,925 nautical miles with the Boeing 747. And then they eventually beat their own record in the year 2000, adding another 400 nautical miles from Atlanta to make a total of 7,330 nautical miles. In 2004, Singapore Airlines thought, hang on, we want the title of the world's longest route, and they launched non-stop flights from New York's Newark airport to Singapore, and this had a total distance of 8,274 nautical miles as the crow flies. And, you know, it's only been beaten slightly since, and that was also by Singapore Airlines. It was using the Airbus A340 for this route, but and this had an all-business class cabin. So, you know, I would have loved to have seen that cabin. But eventually, you know, the financial economic performance of the route is cited to have played a decision in ending it in November 2013. So with Singapore Airlines out of the race, the length of the route actually fell significantly. Qantas then held the title for 7,452 nautical miles between Fort Worth and Sydney. The first year they held this, it was both the 747 and the 380, and then the next year was also the 380 on its own. 2016 saw Emirates secure a brief stay on the charts with the A380 and the 777. They launched a service from Auckland in New Zealand to the home base of Dubai International Airport, and this clocked in at 7,644 nautical miles. Now, just the year after this, Qatar Airways thought, oh, we can have an easy win here. And they just added the distance from Dubai to Doha onto the route, which was an extra 179 nautical miles for their route from Auckland to Doha. Of course, you know, in 2018, Singapore Airlines, with its ultra-long-range A350s, which just have the premium and business cabin and not the economy, decided to relaunch Newark to Singapore. And then in 2021, as they were coming out of the pandemic, they thought, oh, we'll also launch New York's JFK to Singapore, which was an extra two or three miles. So it's so insignificant, but they beat their record. There was one other thing that I did want to talk about, which doesn't really figure into the numbers because it never became a regularly scheduled flight. It was always a one-off, but these were the flights from Papeete in Tahiti to Paris in France. And the longest of these clocked in at 8,709 nautical miles during the pandemic, which was this non-stop domestic, the world's longest non-stop domestic flight. But, you know, as it wasn't a regular flight, it doesn't figure into the numbers. But, you know, just to sort of wrap this segment up, it is all about to change. And why is that? Well, you may remember that a couple of weeks ago, I talked about Alan Joyce leaving Qantas, and one of his legacies will be sort of really kicking off the Project Sunrise project, which wants to, seeks to connect Sydney Kingsford Smith Airport to a bunch of airports, but most importantly, London Heathrow Airport. And this is going to be really impressive because they have flown this route twice before, once with an empty passenger and cargo-wise 747 that was fueled to the brim with fuel in 1989, which only just made it to Sydney, I think. And then also a couple of years ago with a brand new Boeing 787 Dreamliner that had just 70 passengers on it. They want to use a modified A350 aircraft from, I think, 2025 onwards. And this flight would clock in at 9,190 nautical miles as the crow flies. So, it looks like there's exciting things to come.
Definitely.
Back to you in the studio, Joe.
It's really cool to see how these long routes have evolved as technology's grown. And, you know, Project Sunrise is going to be a cool one. I wouldn't mind trying it out, maybe just once, but I'm not sure if I'd go for the super long non-stop or the comfortable layover. You know, kind of depends if there's lounges involved.
The comfortable layover, though, you're not really laying over for that long, are you?
No,
it depends. If you stop for a night or two, then it's different. But I remember flying Sydney to London with BA via Singapore. And it was just a case of, you know, get off the plane and go and sit in the lounge for an hour or so and then get back on the plane. And when you're in this situation, you know, you could also just stay on the plane, I think.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Anyway, it'd be good to see them taking off eventually. But I haven't got a good segue, so I'm just going to jump on in there. You know, we've talked about before how different it must be for passengers in the USA who are not as protected for cancelled and delayed flights as we are. Because here in Europe, we've got EU 261, which means you can claim back not just the cost of your ticket, but also sometimes hundreds of dollars on top when your plans have been disrupted. It also ensures that stranded passengers are looked after. So airlines have to provide you with food, accommodation if you're waiting overnight, and onward travel if they cancel your flight. So, you know, in the States, they have been moving to provide more protections for passengers. If you remember last summer, after the very heavily disrupted peak season, the DOT launched an online dashboard, which was designed in part to pressure the airlines to improve their customer service. It kind of gave people the ability to check each airline policy in one place, all very easy to see on things like refunds and compensation if flights did get cancelled or delayed. So it's kind of laying it all bare and hoping the airlines pick up the benefits that they give to their passengers. So, you know, with that, each of the 10 largest US airlines quickly promised to provide cash or vouchers for meals when a cancellation forces passengers to wait at least 3 hours for another flight. 9 out of the 10, all but Frontier Airlines, also promised to pay for accommodation for passengers overnight. But now the US government wants to make these protections even greater. Because on Monday this week, President Biden and Transport Secretary Pete Buttigieg, I don't know if I got that right this time, announced plans to
No one complained last week.
Oh, that's good. I think as long as it's not butt gig, then I'm good. Announced plans to compensate passengers who are stranded when flights get cancelled. So President Biden said later this year, my administration will propose a historic new rule that will make it mandatory, not voluntary, but mandatory for all US airlines to compensate you with meals, hotels, taxis, rideshares, and rebooking fees, as well as cash miles and or travel vouchers when they're the ones to blame for the cancellation of or delay. And all that's on top of refunding the cost of your ticket. I mean, this sounds very similar to what we've already got here in Europe. So I don't think it's entirely out of the question. But if it does go into place, it will be the first measure of its kind ever in the US. And I think the big difference is this difference between mandatory and voluntary. You know, a lot of airlines have done voluntarily good things to improve customer service and experience, but it's not mandatory. So there are many airlines out there that can still cancel your flight and destroy your plans and not have much comeback from it. So the planned rulemaking wants to address, as I say, the compensation for passengers when there is a controllable airline cancellation or significant delay. So this is one of the things that's going to come up a lot, and that's actually one of its objectives, is to define what is a controllable cancellation or delay. So, you know, Airlines for America weighed in and they said actually half of or more than half of cancellations between 2022 and so far in 2023 were either caused by extreme weather or air traffic control outages. And they pointed out that it's not in the airline's interest to delay or cancel flights. So, you know, what they think is going to go in this legislation is delays caused by airlines such as relating to maintenance, crewing problems, aircraft cleaning, baggage loading, refueling. So, you know, things that are directly within the airline's control. But, you know, last year when they had all that disaster, and particularly over the holiday season, you know, that was an extreme weather event. So none of that would have fallen under this legislation. But I guess that's something they're going to have to figure out. DOT has also launched a new website called flightrights.gov, which highlights which airlines currently offer cash compensation, provide travel credits or vouchers, or give frequent flyer miles when they cause delays and cancellations. Surprisingly, only one airline guarantees frequent flyer miles, two airlines guarantee travel credits or vouchers, but no airline guarantees cash compensation. So that's going to be a big change. But I think it's generally a pretty good outcome for passengers in the US. Hopefully it will improve customer service and make people feel more confident to fly.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine a situation without this compensation just as standard, because I think there's a fine line, though, because I know a lot of the European carriers get annoyed with some of the stuff they have to pay for. But, you know, I just can't imagine that it's just some airlines out there in the world are just like, oh, there's a problem, deal with it.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's all we've got time for on today's podcast. We hope you enjoyed it, and we welcome any feedback at editorial@simpleflying.com.
For more great content, you can visit our website at simpleflying.com or find us on social media. Simply search for Simple Flying.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a rating on your favorite podcast player. Thanks for listening.
Bye.